This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
His whole theme was rising, and yeah. I'm making a joke that we're not high, we're rising. Because it's funny to say. Because it's like...
I get it now. I think I probably should have initially, but I didn't.
Seems like it's something that shouldn't have been that hard.
I put... pretty much agree with that.
You ruined it, though.
I did, and I'm sorry. We can try it again.
3, 2. Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 KOGO. I am Scott Lewis, the CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice of San Diego. I'm joined, as always, by Andrew Keats. He's managing editor at Voice.
How you doing, pal?
And fellow managing editor Andrea Lopez Villafaña. What is up, Lopez?
Hey, Lewis. Good to be here.
Coming up on the show this week, the city of San Diego started rolling out bins for compost. The green bins are going out. They're being deployed. You get yours yet?
As we speak.
As we speak.
I don't know if I'm getting it. I saw them this morning. They were a couple blocks from my house, so I'm hoping I get it.
Very excited. Our Mackenzie Elmer has been following the program. We'll share what she's seeing on the streets and how this initiative could cut greenhouse gases. That's the goal. People do it, but it's a whole new burden. Wednesday, San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria delivered his State of the City speech, his third, but his first in person because of the whole thing that we all dealt with. He says San Diego is rising, not high. He's not talking about the sea level. He's talking about us. In the city. We'll pull on a couple threads from the speech and our biggest takeaways. And finally, do we have the makings of a San Diego special? Find out. That's all coming up, Stuart. Okay, this is one of those moments where the world of policy clashes with the real world, right? For years, they've
It's very exciting to me when it happens.
Yeah, so here's another moment.
We just grab your popcorn and watching it.
Because there's going to be a lot of people who have no idea what's happening, clashing with the people who've been scheming about it for years, literally, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so...
planning for it? We don't need to make it seem so nefarious.
Scheme doesn't have to be a pejorative.
All right.
Scheme is just scheming out. It's a scheme.
I do, but now I'm picturing all these people in a room, really dark. What color should we make the bins?
Well, they had been planning for some time to get everybody green bins in the city of San Diego so that we can separate out our food waste and our yard waste and both protect the landfill's capacity.
You know what else goes in those things?
What?
Pizza boxes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can't recycle a pizza box because it's soiled.
Yeah.
You can put your pizza boxes in the
green bins. So paper can go in there?
Soiled paper.
Soiled paper. Yeah.
Right. Sure. But let's just say pizza boxes.
Okay, pizza boxes.
Because you've been dealing with those without any sort of real idea where they should go.
Yeah.
For a while, I'm sure. Most of us have been.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get into this. So the clash is now that the plan for the green bins has now... happened. The bins are being rolled out. You said you saw them in Barrio Logan today.
Yeah. It's like this big truck and they have layered of stacked green bins. And yet they had a couple workers just kind of pulling one out and putting them next to other bins.
Now, do they scan it that it's part of your family or whatever? Or did they just hand them out? Did you see?
I didn't see how they handed them out. I am curious how that happens because my boyfriend's mom, who lives a couple blocks from us, she has She owns her home, and the bottom part is an apartment, and she lives in the top part. So she does have a tenant. And I was told she got 4 green bins.
Yeah. For 2 units.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know, like, how they went about scanning or assigning.
She got 4.
But she got 4.
Oh, I'm telling.
And she was like, I've been talking to my boyfriend about these green bins and how we're going to get one.
So the reality for him was closer than for others.
We live in the zip code where the city is rolling these out.
And, for equity.
Uh-huh. So I had told him what was going to happen, and he kind of passed this along to her. But she was still very surprised, one, why she got 4 bins, and two, like the thought of throwing in food into these little pails that they're also giving you along with the
green bin. Okay, describe the pails. You both mentioned the pails. How big are we talking?
It was described to me as like the size of a laptop and then like a little taller.
Yeah, yeah. I would say it's the size of a laptop. We actually have the photo of one of the bins in Mackenzie's story from yesterday. Mm-hmm. It's probably the size of a laptop, but she was just saying, my boyfriend's mom was saying like, well, it's going to smell. And she, you know, had all these concerns of...
Well, I mean, I don't think that's unreasonable. The stinkiest parts of your trash are usually the food.
Yeah.
And
I mean, even that is like a second order. There's going to be a lot of people who just get home and they're like, what is this? What is this?
Yeah. So that's right. There's two clashes with the reality. One is like, what is this? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the next is, how do we transform our lives to do this? Now, Mackenzie, being the environmentalist nerd she is, has documented how you can like set aside your food waste and put it, they're encouraging you to put it in your freezer, right?
It's like how to keep it from smelling bad.
Now, do people generally have room in their freezers? I don't like have weird science experiments or anything in my freezer, and it is jam-packed all the time.
I just have like so many dino nuggets. For like an obscene amount of dino nuggets.
You know,
frozen pancakes and dino nuggets. Yeah. That part of my house is dedicated to those two things.
Or the old like protein waffles nobody wants.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, my freezer has always been pretty empty. Like I have ice packs and frozen berries. It's pretty much it. But my little cousin's visiting this week, so I bought extra food. So now it's filled with dino nuggets, like waffles.
Yeah.
Pizzas. Now I have no space, but I see where you're coming from, Andy.
So the pail looks like it could fit in the thing.
I'm showing Scott a picture right now.
Nobody can have that in their freezer that has anything to do with like food preservation. The freezers are small. Well, who has big freezers? This isn't Wyoming with like everybody's got like a giant freezer in their garage with the deer meat from the winter.
The waist high thing where you...
Yeah.
I don't know what it says exactly, and I guess I'll find out once I get mine, but the bins do have a little pamphlet kind of attached to them, and it looks like the big bins, and it looks like they have a sticker on top that has some sort of instruction. So I guess if you do show up and there's like a random green bin in front of your house, you can read the instructions, but...
I still feel like I would like just like start looking around like who did this? Is somebody recording me right now? Where's Ashton Kutcher? Yeah.
Yeah. So now there was a headline that caught my attention that said like we might get penalized.
Well, the state would.
So it would go. This is a state law. The state passed a law years ago requiring this.
Cities.
Requiring cities to do this. What the city's requirement to do is not to provide green bins to everyone. That's the means to the end. The end is diverting all of this methane-causing food waste to a different part of the landfill where it can be treated and capped and turned into mulch, basically, that would be available for people to pick up or to otherwise return to the earth from whence it came. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if people don't do it, right, that then the city won't be able to make good on its requirement to divert the vast majority of food waste from landfills, and the state could hold cities responsible, and cities in turn could hold individuals responsible.
I could.
Think could. I mean, people didn't react well to the idea that they were going to be charged for every mile that they drive, which is something that's already happened to them throughout their entire lives.
Yeah.
So the idea of like being charged for like processing your garbage improperly, I think would be pretty controversial.
Yeah, it seems like it's far off. So are you and Ulysses coming around to the idea of separating the food waste?
He is not.
He's not.
He said he is absolutely not doing it. But I kind of...
I like the stridency of it. It's like the first time you heard it, like, nah, not doing it. And then just hold on that position for as long as you can.
I kind of want to try just to...
Like,
it seems
I will keep rotten eggs on our couch before I put them in that green bin. Like,
pretty much. And then I told him, I was like, well, you know, the city says eventually, maybe they'll like fine people for not doing this. But who knows if, you know, when and how that will happen. He's like, that's not happening. I'm not paying them anything. I was like, oh, I just love how you're
I won't pay it.
Yeah. So I'm kind of excited to see what happens. And also, I don't know what else you can throw in there. So it sounds like pizza boxes.
For instance.
I'm curious about dog poop. I don't know. I have all these questions.
There's going to be some folks that do it right with like a layer of dog poop, layer of food, eggs and banana peels, and then yard waste and pizza box, and then another layer of dog poops. I don't know. How often does it come?
Once a
week. It'll be weekly because of the smell issue.
Oh.
And, you know, so you've got your bin in your house.
Yeah.
You're going to take that out and dump it into a larger bin out back you know, that'll go alongside your trash and recycling bins. Those outdoor ones could attract rodents, flies, smells, if they were allowed to sit for a long time. So those will be picked up every week.
Okay.
But there is confusion. Like Mackenzie said, she went out to see, you know, some of the bins rolled out. And she said that a woman was like, oh, I got a new trash can, you know, a new trash bin. So like she thought she could just put regular trash in it. And, you know, same as like with my mother-in-law, like she was like, I don't really know what to do with this. And then she had questions. She was like, are we paying for this? Like, are they charging us for this? And he was trying to explain Measure B to her. And she was like, no way people wouldn't vote for that. And he's like, no, you don't understand. It already passed. And she's like, no, people are not going to vote for that. And he's like, no, it already passed. So it's just funny when policy clashes with real life.
Yeah. It's even when it's clashing, it's not aware that it's happening.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah. Mackenzie told me that like when she walked away from that woman, she said that it still seemed to not have gotten through, that this was not a trash can. She told multiple times, and she's like, I think she still thought it was a trash can.
Okay. There you go. Let us know your thoughts on and experiences with the green bins.
Tag us on social media. Mackenzie loves this trash story, and so she'll be following it for us. You can keep up with all of her reporting and her biweekly newsletter, The Environment Report, at vosd.org/environment.
Lopez, you got to sit with me at the State of the City.
Yeah, I felt like I was next to a superstar. Everybody was like,
I'm
Scott,
off this show.
Hey, Scott.
Please get me out of here.
Seriously.
I have no idea why you would say that.
Because it's true. Everybody was like, Scott Lewis. Oh, I recognize your name. And even when they like didn't really know who he was, like once it clicked, they would be like, oh, yeah, like I just read your story, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So good. Keep going if you'd
like. How many times did he say something that was like just like a brick being dropped into the conversation? Just so awkward.
No, he wasn't awkward.
She got the she
I felt
got,
like other people were awkward.
She got there was some serious awkwardness. There was I got the very rare occurrence where one person confronts me with negative feedback. And then immediately followed by the next person who had very positive feedback.
On the same issue?
On the very same issue.
Awesome.
And that was that was disorienting even for me. That was usually they're spaced out a little bit.
Right.
But.
I got to say too, I'm a star too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Two people knew who I was.
Yeah.
Stoked.
It was fun.
Happy for you guys.
Now there was one problem, and that was that as the opening ceremonies of this event were coming, she couldn't stop laughing.
I know, very inappropriate times.
And
I think.
I try to, you know, maintain a little bit of dignity, and she's over there just cracking up about stuff. And she couldn't stop cracking up about the MC of the night.
Yeah.
Council President Shawnee Lo Rivera.
It was just like these things that you just don't hear it in normal life, I think. I don't, in your everyday life. You know?
Thank you, Cardinal.
Thank you, Cardinal. It was just so funny to me. Like, in what situation would you say that or hear that? Like, I don't know, it was just hilarious. And then so he started with that, like he said, "Thank you, Cardinal." But then every person afterwards, well, obviously he had to thank everyone after. So
with
then
with their title.
Thank you, Cardinal Service Member. Please stand so we can thank you for your service. Thank you, Karan and Naveed. Thank you, Dr. Magabo Perez. And thank you to every San Diegan who participated in the
program. But there was like a little girl who said the Pledge of Allegiance, and he was like, "Thank you, Emma." Like, it was just so cute. I don't know, it was funny. Maybe it's not as funny as I thought, but it was funny in the moment.
There were all these like applause lines that felt awkward. Like, we threw away 2,800 tons of homeless people's stuff, and everybody's like, "Yay!" It's like, felt a little weird, but she's over there just cracking up the whole time.
I know people around us were probably like, "Why is this girl laughing?
Why is she laughing so much?"
Yeah. All right. So there's a few things that I wanted to talk about here. But what was your take, Andy?
About the state of the city?
Yeah,
I think it was strategically dull. I think it was like there was a plan to not try to make it into a bigger moment than it needed to be. You could debate the wisdom of that. It seems fine enough to me. But I kind of started to get the impression of how the mayor and his administration sees themselves in the shape of the administration. It seems like they're being deliberately not progressive.
Yeah.
Going out of their way to just be very non-confrontational with the policies they want to pursue, and to sort of build a platform of like normcore politics.
Yeah, I think what stood out for me the most was that it was very heavy on law enforcement. He even had that line like, "Lawlessness will not be tolerated." And he talked at length about officers, about an officer who had come on the force, about their retention, about law, you know, the laws that he wants to see enhanced, and the police he wants to see retained, and the budget that he protected, and
the child care program. Officers.
And there was a lot of, and I felt like it was this, as to your point, like norm, it seemed like it was more about like a blue collar speech that would highlight labor in the progressive way.
Right.
But really try to tie it to like law and order. Like we, you know, people shouldn't have to walk in the streets around tent encampments, and fentanyl needs to be shut down, and all of these things. And he was just kind of, it seemed like, to the extent that there was a philosophy about the speech, it was about, I'm going to be a kind of traditional law and order San Diego mayor, but I love labor.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, if there were the most progressive ideas, there were just sort of saying that project labor agreements are good, that it was wrong to take pensions from city employees, that we want to invest in city staff. And you know, that sort of pro labor positioning is progressive, certainly. But there was not any of these like big bold agendas. Here is the ways we're going to change and improve San Diego. Sort of like consciousness of like the stereotype of like a hectoring liberal who's trying to get you to do things differently. There was none of that.
I didn't even mention climate change.
Right. Right. And like, you know, some of the stuff that you mentioned about fentanyl or lawlessness will not be tolerated. Like, I do know that there's a faction of people who read into that a certain view of politics towards policing. But you got to be pretty online to even be able to like decode that in that way. I think for most people, it would just be like a pretty banal statement.
I agree with that, but you know, but 2 years ago, he wouldn't have made that speech.
Totally agree. I totally agree. I think he's like warming into like a proud centrism that is reminiscent of Joe Biden and like Eric Adams.
Yeah. So he transitioned from police, mm-hmm. and also another sort of police adjacent concept of how many people he wanted to basically involuntarily commit to mental health treatment, right? Mm-hmm. And how he's going to double that effort this year. And he transitioned from that to a story of a couple. He brought in all these people all the time, and it was a couple who had struggled with drugs and homelessness and incarceration, and they were bringing themselves back, and they had been placed in transitional housing and sober living as they tried to make that transition. And that's how he introduced homelessness. And I thought that the discussion about homelessness was interesting in that it was really bleak and not hopeful. And so here's what he said first.
It's not okay for children to have to walk in the middle of the street past encampments just to get to their school. And we cannot expect people whose homes and businesses are surrounded by encampments to just put up with their impacts.
So he presents the problem first from the eyes of people who are sick of the problem that they see, mm-hmm. not that they're experiencing, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like children walking on the street to avoid the tents. And then also he mentioned business owners and property owners, like not having to just put up with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so he...
Yeah, like it's not okay to expect business owners to just deal with it.
Yeah.
And again, I want to say that like I know like he is talking to a discourse that occurs about homelessness. That is in response to an ongoing dialogue that has been occurring in the city about homelessness. But like you have to have opted into that conversation to be aware of those like discussion points as being hot buttons at all. I think to like the vast majority of people who live here, that doesn't even read as controversial.
Oh, I don't even think it is. I think everybody's on board with that point. That's right along the point, like the norm core thing. I did hear there were some concerns from homeless advocates about how he was describing homelessness itself or the people who had fallen into it. But I don't think anybody is okay with the tent encampments. It's just, is it a law enforcement beat heads approach that needs to be done, or is there some sort of like massive homeless?
I think there's a strain of homeless activism that bristles at the idea that one of the victims of homelessness is every other person who has a home that has to deal with the unfortunate like inconveniences.
Yeah, okay, I see that. So then he talked about all the different things they've done, the outreach. They've expanded safe parking. They got a new motel they're going to open for families. They got the old central library. The old one is going to be transformed into a homeless shelter. We've heard it's going to house fully 20 people, it sounds like, or shelter them.
Can I share how you ruined someone's dreams that night?
Yes, yes.
This guy behind us, he was like, oh, wow. Like, they're finally going to transform the library into a shelter. And Scott like instantly turns around and goes, do you know how many it's going to house?
Sorry.
During the speech you did that?
It was his moment to explain something to someone.
A remarkable person.
It's what I do.
So you hear somebody who's like enjoying a movie and you're just like, they're going to find the killer.
He talked about how filled the shelters are, usually 92% occupied, which by the way, if there's 1,729 shelter beds, as he said, and they're always 92% occupied, that means at any given time, there's only a few dozen or 100 or so, you know, spots just in downtown. Isn't there, didn't they count like 1,800 people? There's literally not enough shelter beds for all people downtown even, let alone the rest of the city.
Yeah.
So, okay, fine. So, next, he talked about this is the crescendo of the moment with the homeless discussion. He says in 2022, 2,200 people made their way through the shelter and outreach system into some sort of better situation, most of them permanent housing. But then he said this.
The problem we face is that for every 10 people we get off the street and into housing, 13 people become homeless, many for the first time. The reality is there are San Diegans who are simply not able to keep up with the rising cost of living. And it is clear that we must focus more attention on the upstream causes of homelessness to give people a better shot at remaining housed through tough times.
So I think this I want to talk about a couple of things. One, he does not answer that point with anything that explains how we're going to close that gap. And he left it then thus that it is going to keep getting worse, that this situation that we see in the streets is going to keep getting worse. And there's no particular plan or hope to change that. I don't think you can have any other conclusion from that, that all of these things that he listed that they're doing with all the special money they've got to do that, that's all that's happening. And it's not going to change that gap. Then he transitioned into the point about housing. Now, by the way, we got the preview of his speech pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah,
we kind of nailed that.
Well, not an actual preview, but you guys guessed what he was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you laughing about?
You weren't going to let that go unsaid. It's never a chance for you to even consider leaving that.
We could
just
cut
for
it.
Anybody who remembered it.
Sorry.
It's fine.
I did get it right.
I know.
I am who I am.
And here's what he said then about the problem getting worse.
But I want to tell you the truth. Housing ends homelessness. Housing ends homelessness. More housing supply brings down the cost of rent. More homes open the doors of home ownership to more San Diegans.
I think that is overall the vision. That it's going to be like this until that catches up,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so a couple of points on that. I thought he would say housing or homelessness is a housing problem, like we talked about. But he went into a slightly different direction and said housing fixes this.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the speech, he outlined these big, big problems, mm-hmm. right? Like
sidewalks, roads.
Staffing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the biggest one, that 13 people are going homeless for every 10 that are being housed. Mm-hmm. Instead of outlining proportional responses and creations for that, he would list things that are happening that sound big, like thousands of miles of roads being paved, or this much investment being made, or this much, or these individual anecdotal programs, or whatever.
5,000 permits in the city of San Diego.
Right. These numbers that are impossible, even for very well-informed people like you, not me, because you're more informed.
More informed, but it is possible for me to understand them.
Okay. it's hard, though, to put those up and compare them to the proportion of the problem
right.
in the moment that they're being said. So it's like, it just sounds big. It's just like a big number, but you don't have any way of knowing whether it's even enough to keep up with the problem as it grows or even close the gap, right?
Right.
And that's like a constant thing with all of these things that we see. It's like problem. And then a bunch of little things that are happening, you have no idea whether they're enough to make up the difference. And so when it got to the housing, there were all of these things that came out, all of these pledges and promises and signs that something was happening, but you have no idea whether it's enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not even like, I want to give deference that like it's a speech that's supposed to be broadly appealing. It can't devolve into a seminar on like housing units per capita
yeah.
or something like that. But in that case, just like leave the 5,000 permits out of there. Right? Like it's empty information.
Yeah, so
it doesn't tell you anything.
What was the pledge with that?
That wasn't even a pledge. I mean, his pledge related to permits was that projects that have 100% affordable housing, fully affordable projects, would get their permits issued in 30 days. 30 days from the time that the developer comes to the city to say, we're ready to build. And that's typically right now like a six-month process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, he made this change through an executive order. And, like, I think during the speech or maybe just after it, they tweeted out a photo of him signing the executive order. And, like, I have covered for years the city's efforts, including, you know, often talking to Todd Gloria when he was on the city council about what the city was trying to do to make issuing permits faster, to make it cheaper and easier to build more homes.
Yeah, there are two things I hear from people the most about city government. One is, when are they going to fix the streets?
Yeah.
And how come they don't fix them better?
Yeah, yeah.
And the other is, it takes forever to get a permit to build housing. And if you think that housing is a problem, why is that the case? And both of those are so daunting to investigate that I've never actually figured out how to.
Yeah. And so I did some while I worked for you. You paid for me to do that. You could read those if you'd like. But like, I, you know, Todd was on the city council at the time and I talked to him about it. He's knowledgeable about the situation. He knows, you know, he could go chapter and verse about like ministerial permits and, oh, we're moving process fours into process threes and process threes into process twos. And that's what the community plan updates are about. So we can have a programmatic EIR that developers can tear off of and blah, blah, blah. He could talk about it as well as like a mid manager from DSD or the planning department. So he knows this stuff. And he also knows that like, the thing that has been keeping permits from being issued faster is not that no one had the idea to do it faster.
Yeah, an executive order to do it faster.
Just like, well, we'll just do it fast. Like, that's not been the holdup, mm-hmm. to my understanding. It's been like a matter of staffing or like simple processes and requirements that make things go faster. So he did talk about hiring like contracted staff to come into DSD, Development Services Department, to start issuing permits. But he also referred to that as a necessary step to address the fact that there's a backlog right now. There's a famously large permit backlog based on some issues that DSD has been having on their side of things. And so he's bringing in more contracted employees to address that permitting backlog. At the same time, he's guaranteeing that affordable housing projects will get their permits in 30 days. And there's no detail on like how that's going to change. And if that change is going to necessitate longer permitting times for everything else. And so like, I am interested in hearing more detail on how that's going to come about, whether there's more reforms that are going to be necessary to make it possible. Because it's not a matter of people just up until now not wanting to do it faster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's unsatisfying to talk about this like boring part of politics and policy and like the nuts and bolts of government. But like, there's a lot of people who come to work every day at a very particular building where the department is called Development Services, and developers come in with like reams of paper and like, you know, blueprints and outlines, and it gets sent to like specialized people to deal with the fire requirements and the structural engineering requirements and the electrical requirements. And like, it's just not something that gets hand waved away. And if it was, that would have happened already.
Yeah. So I, on the one hand, like, I do appreciate leadership that asks constantly the impossible question, right?
Sure.
Things have to get better. You have to, you know, in our case, you have to reach more people. You have to have more impact. You've got to constantly get better. And I understand that sort of thing. But this is a more direct, like, well, you must do it because I've ordered it executively.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like an empty thing. It's like Michael Scott in the Office
saying, bankruptcy.
I declare bankruptcy.
Right.
It's like, and they did that with fentanyl too. Like, I, you know, and it's like, okay, what is going to get sacrificed or what's going to get invested in? Now, you said something that you kind of breezed by that actually is pretty significant. Mm-hmm. Hiring contractors to do the Development Services Department permitting work, that's not an outsourcing, right? That's an emergency sort of like supplement.
So how it like works with the labor contract, because those are MEA represented employees, is not something I fully understand. But yeah, I mean, by his own words, we're going to hire contracted employees that'll, I guess, will be here on like an emergency basis until the backlog is gone, something along those lines.
That's really interesting. So I've heard similar sort of hopes for parks. You know, there's staffing problems throughout the city. He did address that as well, and mostly just kind of blamed the previous administration, right?
Yeah, there were still a number of shots at the previous administration here.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's like implicit, like the shape of the city's trajectory that they're trying to chart here, with it being like he said, 2 years ago, I told you the state of our city was fragile. Mm-hmm. Now the state of our city is rising. Like his whole first term is being set up for like a triumphant moment.
When we're high.
Yeah, when we're high. And
at various times, people around the mayor's office in Orbit have been mad at me for implying that there was a higher level of urgency that they could take with regard to homelessness. And I think this speech is proof that they don't consider it an emergency in the same vein as like a natural disaster or COVID or something like that. It was much like it has been over the last several years. It was a part of a speech about the city, and a city that was dealing with a problem, maybe the biggest problem, but not, you know, there was a lot that was talked about before that, from sidewalks.
Boy, speaking of which, should we get LD back on the show to talk sidewalk policy?
Yeah, let's do that real quick. So one of the bigger announcements, besides the 30 days for the permit, which that'll be interesting to see, was the news that he would pursue or had pursued a policy to change the permitting and sort of liability structure of sidewalks. So right now, if you want to, you know, fix the sidewalk in front of your property, it's a pretty involved process, and it's expensive, and it takes a long time, and the city has to be involved with that. And it still is the city's liability. So if you don't keep care of your sidewalk, wait, how did it work?
It's the property owner's responsibility, but the liability falls on the city.
Right. So it's like pass backwards, right?
Yeah.
Like
yes. There's a trip and fall. The city can be sued for the fact that it was in unsafe condition.
And yet it's the property owner's responsibility to make it better.
Right. This was the thrust of Liam Dillon's months of investigation when he was here about the city's broken sidewalk policy.
Right. The Stumbler.
The Stumbler.
We ran a Tumblr called The Stumbler so people could send in their bad sidewalks.
Yeah.
It was good.
It was one of the better things we did for that period.
So what the mayor basically said is, we're going to A, make it easier for you to fix your sidewalks, and B, as a reward, you get to own the liability for it.
Yeah. The course of history is long, but it bends towards redemption for Liam Dillon and his and his search for impact and his reporting.
Have we alerted him?
I was going to tweet him last night, but then I just decided to carry on living my life instead. But we should.
You'd probably be very excited.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us.
Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
Now, one of the other points that Gloria mentioned, although didn't spend that much time on it, considering how big of a deal it would be, is the redevelopment and reconstruction of City Hall. So it's been that way since the 60s. This plaza looks like it was built in the 60s. And
it's classy.
It's classy. Civic Center Plaza. It's got the Civic Theater where the speech was, and then it's got City Hall. It's got Golden Hill or Golden Hall. Mm-hmm. And then next to, across the street from Golden Hall, is the City Operations Building, which has at the bottom the fire station, and that's where the permitting and stuff happens.
DSD, right? Correct, yeah.
Okay, so all of those plots, and now with 101 Ash Street and with the Civic Center Plaza, the tower across from the plaza that has all the city attorneys and other offices, those are all owned by the city, and the mayor, as we've talked about many times, wants to turn that into a bunch of homes and a new plaza and a new city hall. Now, he had a task force to do this, and Andy raised the alarm that we might be headed toward a new San Diego special. I would define a San Diego special as a problem, a dilemma, an opportunity, some sort of maybe undeveloped land, blighted area, or a controversy that needs to get handled, or an unsustainable situation like vacation rentals became, where there was ill-defined laws. It needed to get addressed by a collective action of the city government. Mm-hmm. And of the sort of political class needed to agree to get this done and pursue a solution that resolves it. And a San Diego special is one of those situations that needs to get resolved and cannot be resolved.
We can't do it.
It breaks the collective brain. And it keeps, like, it's like a video game that just keeps hitting that same point over and over again. And just like,
yeah, like all the elements are here for this one.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about where we're at. So the mayor appointed dozens of very important individuals to.
Wait, I'm sorry. I have a question. Yeah. Do we have like a checklist for a San Diego special?
We could start to put it together right now.
We should. That would be so good.
Yeah. Well,
so what you were explaining might as well be the first thing on the list.
Yeah, yeah.
As a task force been appointed.
Has a task force.
Check.
Ding. has the task force made a report? Interim report.
Yeah.
So they reported to the city council this week. The thrust and the group had agreed that the real thing that they should do is build a new city hall where the city operations building is across the street, and then sell the rest of the land to somebody who would turn it into homes and whatever else. Now, apparently, that has created some backlash that was led by the economics group of the task force. They broke into subcommittees.
Subcommittees of the task force.
Disagreement between the subcommittees.
Yeah.
Ding.
Yeah.
So that there's a design committee headed up in part by Jennifer Luce, the architect, famous architect. She's making the point like, whoa. This isn't just a challenge to house office workers for the city with an office tower. Like, we have a once in a century opportunity to redo this whole area to connect it to other attractions throughout the city, the Shell, the Petco Park, Bobo Park, and whatever else. Like
Waterfront
that.
Park, right. Arcadero's, Seaport
that
Village,
we need to do
line.
Something special. And you can't do that if you put an office tower in with a street in front of it, and then the rest of it goes to other developers. So that'll be really interesting to see how that gets worked out. Now, the city council wanted to put the brakes on a little bit before moving on to opening it up for bid or anything like that. But this is,
city
I think...
City council pausing before moving forward. And which, I want to be clear, because people are sensitive, I understand. We're out here sounding like pundits. Any one of these decisions in isolation may be prudent and the correct one.
And it may not be an inherent good thing to just build an office tower as fast as you can.
Or, yeah, to just move forward.
I'm not saying
that that's right. I'm just saying it's the collection of all of these facts together that constitute the San Diego specialness of the situation.
Yeah.
That's where we get to the spirit of the San Diego special.
Yeah. So when would it actually make the transition?
Well, for now, I want to just focus on all the component parts that we've already assembled. So it's the ones you've mentioned, but also I think we would be derelict in our responsibility as the arbiters of this question if we didn't mention that like 101 Ash Street is entangled in this whole mess. And so we get to bring along all of that baggage.
That's true.
Which is important.
Just that is a tick, right? 101 Ash Street.
Like, you know,
it's
like
involved.
Past city scandal. Boom.
Boom.
Also, like, 5 previously aborted attempts at a San Diego City Hall all figure into this. The Sandag Grand Central, like, wannabe inclusion into the concept.
Right. So,
like,
here's...
Making something more pliable by just, like, leveling stuff on top of it, which is what they've sort of done here.
Can I propose a potential moment where it would cross to an official one?
It's great. I'm all ears.
I think that it crosses into an official San Diego special when a plan has been adopted and pursued, and that plan is derailed.
Okay.
So if a consensus builds somehow through this to do something, and then it is stopped or falls off because of some sort of financial or lawsuit or something, that's where it would flip, I think.
Okay. I'm just going to introduce a question here.
Yeah.
That I anticipate asking you intermittently in our ongoing future.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in. Maybe we could do some data collection and chart the trajectory of this over time.
This is good.
Do you ever expect to cover a city council meeting in the new city hall? Right now, as we sit here today, January 2023, do you think you as a journalist will ever cover a city council meeting in the new city hall?
I'm 46.
Yeah.
How long do you think I'll do this? There's a good chance, like, well into my 70s.
Yeah, I mean... In terms of, like, hanging it up because something better comes along, or, like,
yeah,
no,
or they finally pay me to coach softball.
So 46, right?
Yeah, so 25 more years. Okay. There will be.
Okay. All right. That's where we are right now. That's good. That's our first data point.
And 25 more years.
Within the next 25 years, Scott is confident there will be a new city hall and that he will cover a city council meeting. I'm going to ask you this from time to time.
Yeah.
Checking in
where we stand on that one.
All right. Well, stay tuned. We'll track whether that task force produces a report that the city council is excited about or whether it needs another task force. Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast hosted in part by a 10U softball manager named Scott Lewis. It's the most popular public affairs podcast hosted in part by a 10U softball manager. If you want to keep up with everything about the podcast, you can do that at vosd.org/pod and sign up for our weekly newsletter. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego. Andrew Keats is managing editor. Andrea Lopez Villafana is also managing editor. And Nate John is our expert producer. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.